Einstein didn't discover that light is fast. He discovered that light is the one thing in the universe that has no rest frame, no place to stand still, and that one fact alone demolishes everything Newton built. And I mean demolishes, not refines, not updates, not gently corrects at the edges, demolishes. The entire Newtonian architecture, absolute space, absolute time, the clean separation between what is happening here and what is happening there collapses the moment you take seriously what it means for light to have no rest frame. Newton gave us a universe that ran like a clock. Einstein looked at that clock and showed us it wasn't telling the truth. And the thing that exposed it, the crowbar that pried the whole structure apart, was light, just light, moving the way it moves, being what it is, what light actually does. I need to tell you what Newton assumed, because this is where the argument starts. And if you don't feel the weight of what Newton was saying, you won't feel the weight of what Einstein destroyed. Newton's universe has a backdrop. Call it absolute space, an invisible, fixed, infinite grid against which all motion is measured. A thing either moves or it doesn't, and the verdict is handed down by this grid, this cosmic reference standard, this thing that exists independently of everything in it. And layered on top of that is absolute time, a universal clock, ticking the same rate everywhere, for everyone, under all conditions. You and I, no matter how fast we're moving relative to each other, agree on the time, we agree on simultaneity. If two events happen at the same moment for me, they happen at the same moment for you. That's not an assumption Newton argues for. It's so obvious to him, he doesn't even bother to state it explicitly. It's baked into the foundation so deep that pulling it out feels like pulling out the ground itself. And for 200 years, it worked brilliantly, embarrassingly well. Planets, pendulums, cannon trajectories, tides, Newton's mechanics handled all of it with a precision that still staggers me when I think about it. So when I say Einstein demolished it, I want to be fair to Newton. Newton wasn't wrong because he was sloppy. He was wrong because the regime he was working in, everyday speeds, everyday distances, hid the crack in the foundation. The crack was always there. It just took light to expose it. James Clerk Maxwell, 1865, writes down four equations, the most beautiful four equations in the history of physics, and I include general relativity in that comparison, which is saying something. Those four equations describe electricity, magnetism, and their relationship to each other, and buried inside them is a prediction. The equations spit out a wave, an electromagnetic wave, and they tell you exactly how fast that wave moves. The speed comes right out of the equations. It's determined by two constants of nature, the permittivity of free space and the permeability of free space. You plug in the numbers and you get 3 × 10⁸ meters per second. The speed of light, Maxwell recognized it immediately. Light is an electromagnetic wave. Fine, except here's the problem. Here's where Newton starts to sweat. Maxwell's equations give you a speed with no reference frame attached. They don't say light moves at 3 × 10⁸ meters per second relative to the source. They don't say relative to the observer. They don't qualify it at all. The speed just sits there, naked, absolute, attached to nothing. And in a Newtonian universe, that makes no sense. Speeds are always relative to something. That's not a philosophical position. It's just arithmetic. If I'm on a train moving at 50 miles an hour and I throw a baseball at 30 miles an hour in the direction of travel, someone standing on the platform measures that baseball at 80 miles an hour, velocities add. That's not a law. That's just what velocity means. So the question everyone asked, and it was a reasonable question, a sensible question, a question that any sane physicist should have asked, was, relative to what is light moving at 3 × 10⁸? And the answer everyone agreed on was relative to the ether, the medium, the stuff that light waves through the way sound waves through air. The ether was the reference frame Maxwell's equations were secretly assuming. Find the ether, measure your speed through it, and everything becomes consistent. In 1887, Michelson and Morley built the most sensitive interferometer the world had ever seen in a basement in Cleveland, floating the whole apparatus on a pool of mercury to isolate it from vibrations, and they looked for the ether wind. They looked for the difference in light speed depending on the direction. Earth moving through the aether should produce a headwind in one direction, a tailwind in the other, and the interference pattern of their split light beam should reveal it. They found nothing. Zero. The speed of light was the same in every direction, regardless of Earth's motion through space. The ether wind wasn't there. I want to dwell on, because what happened next in physics is one of the most psychologically revealing episodes in the history of human thought. The Michelson-Morley result comes out, and instead of concluding there is no aether, the physics community concludes our experiment must be wrong, or something strange is happening that hides the aether. Lorentz and Fitzgerald independently proposed that moving objects physically contract in the direction of motion that matter actually squishes as it moves through. The aether, in exactly the right amount to cancel the effect Michelson and Morley were looking for. This is not a crazy idea. It was a serious proposal, mathematically worked out by serious people. Lorentz wrote down the transformation equations that carry his name, the Lorentz transformations, and they are correct. They are exactly right. He just had the wrong interpretation of what they meant. Einstein, in 1905, looked at the same equations and asked a different question. Not, what is happening to matter as it moves through the aether, but what if there is no aether? What if Maxwell's equations are telling the absolute truth? And the speed of light is genuinely the same for every observer, regardless of their motion. And then he asked a harder question, the question with teeth. What does the rest of physics have to look like if that's true? The answer is special relativity, and the answer is violent. If the speed of light is the same for every observer, if you sitting still and I flying past you at half the speed of light, both measure a passing photon at exactly 3 times 10 to the 8th meters per second, which we do, which every experiment ever performed confirms, then something has to give. Because by ordinary arithmetic, we should disagree. If I'm chasing the photon at half the speed of light, I should measure it going slower relative to me, but I don't. It's still going at full speed, which means the concepts we use to calculate relative speed, space, and time cannot be what Newton said they were. They cannot be absolute. They cannot be the same for all observers. Time must slow down for moving observers. Space must contract. Simultaneity must become relative events that are simultaneous in your frame or not simultaneous in mine. All of this falls out of one demand. The speed of light is invariant. One demand, and the entire Newtonian clockwork falls apart. Here is where it gets strange. And I mean strange in a way that should stop you cold, because this isn't the pleasant kind of strange where something is merely surprising. This is the kind of strange that forces you to revise what you thought the words space and time referred to. Take a clock, any clock, a pendulum, a cesium atom, your heartbeat, whatever you like. Now put that clock on a rocket and accelerate it to 90% of the speed of light. According to special relativity, that clock runs slow, not because of vibration, not because of some mechanical effect, not because anything is wrong with the clock is perfect. It runs slow because time itself is running slow for the moving object. You, watching from the ground, see the clock ticking at roughly 44% of its normal rate. An astronaut on that rocket, looking at the clock right next to her, sees it ticking normally. She's right. You're right. Both of you are right. Because there is no single universal time. There is only time relative to a reference frame, and the two frames give genuinely different answers. This is not a paradox. I want to be very clear about this, because people love to call it a paradox, and that word lets them off the hook. They say paradox, and they get to feel like the theory is confused or incomplete, when actually they're the ones who are confused. It is not a paradox, it is a consequence. If you accept that the speed of light is the same for all observers, and you'd better accept it, because every experiment in the history of physics backs it up, then time dilation is not strange. It is mandatory The strangeness is not in the theory. The strangeness is that the reality is not built the way your intuition told you it was. I got wrong because I think it's instructive, and because I've never been particularly interested in protecting my own reputation at the expense of clarity. When I first came to this material, and I came to it as a young man who already thought he understood a lot about physics, which is the most dangerous kind of ignorance. I thought time dilation was a kind of optical illusion, not literally, but almost. I thought, okay, the clocks disagree, but somewhere behind that disagreement, there's a real time, an objective rate of aging, and the relative effects are just what different observers see. The way two people looking at a fence from different angles see different lengths of shadow. The shadow disagreement is real, but the fence has a definite length. I thought time dilation was like that. The rate of aging has a definite answer, and the apparent disagreement between frames is just a perspective effect. I was wrong. The disagreement is the reality. There is no deeper level where everybody agrees. The twin who travels at relativistic speed and comes back younger than her sibling didn't just appear to age more slowly. She aged more slowly, fewer heartbeats, fewer cell divisions, less elapsed time in every physical sense of the phrase. The asymmetry between the twins isn't mysterious. It comes from the fact that one of them accelerated and the other didn't. And acceleration has a preferred meaning in general relativity. But the point stands, there is no universal backstage where real time is ticking at a fixed rate that everyone secretly agrees on. That backstage doesn't exist. Newton's absolute time is gone, and it's not coming back. So what does this have to do with light having no rest frame? Everything. Let me show you. In special relativity, you can move between reference frames using the Lorentz transformations. These transformations mix space and time together. They are rotations, in a sense, in a four-dimensional space called Minkowski space-time. When you move to a frame that is moving faster relative to the original, you are rotating the time axis relative to the space axis. Events that were at the same time but different places get shuffled. What's simultaneous in one frame isn't in another. What's in the future for one observer can be in the present for another. Space and time are not separate things. They are two aspects of a single four-dimensional structure, and different observers are just cutting that structure at different angles. What happens when you try to boost to the reference frame of a photon? What happens when you try to rotate the axes all the way to the speed of light? The mathematics breaks down. The Lorentz factor, the gamma factor that tells you how much time dilates and lengths contract, has a denominator that contains the square root of 1 minus v squared over c squared. When v equals c, you are taking the square root of 0. You are dividing by 0. The transformation becomes undefined. Not infinite in some physical sense that might still be interpretable, undefined. There is no Lorentz boost that takes you to the frame of a photon. You cannot get there from here, no matter how many boosts you stack. The frame of a photon does not exist in the mathematics of special relativity, and this is not a limitation of the theory. It is a statement about what photons are. A photon is not a slowly moving object at rest. It is not a fast-moving object that you could, in principle, catch up to. It is a fundamentally different kind of thing, a thing that exists only at the speed of light, that has no rest state, that participates in space-time in a categorically different way than massive objects do. Here is the concrete way to see this. In Minkowski space-time, you can calculate a quantity called the space-time interval, the four-dimensional analog of distance. For any two events in space-time, say event A, which is the photon being emitted, and event B, which is the photon being absorbed, you calculate the interval using the spatial separation and the time separation. For massive objects traveling between two events, the space-time interval is always positive or negative, depending on your sign convention, but non-zero. Proper time elapses. Something real happens to the clock between the two events. For a photon, the space-time interval between emission and absorption is exactly zero. Always. No matter how far the photon traveled in space, no matter how long it took in coordinate time, the interval is zero. This is called a null interval, and the path the photon traces through space-time is called a null geodesic. The photon travels along the surface of a cone in Minkowski space, the light cone, and on that surface, space-time distance is zero. What this means, in physical terms, is that the emission and the absorption of a photon are, in a deep geometric sense, the same event. They are separated in space, they are separated in coordinate time, but they are not separated in space-time. The photon connects them without accumulating any proper time between them, because for something traveling at the speed of light, proper time does not pass. The photon doesn't experience a journey from here to there. There is no journey in the only sense of the word that physics makes precise. Now, here is where it gets strange again, and this time I mean cosmologically strange, the kind of strange that makes you feel small in a way that is not comfortable. Light from distant stars, from galaxies, billions of light years away, has been traveling for billions of years in coordinate time. From our frame, sitting here in this room, that photon left its source when the universe was young, traversed an almost incomprehensible expanse of space, and arrived here tonight. Billions of years of coordinate time, but the photon accumulated zero proper time. From the photon's perspective, not that a photon has a perspective, but you understand what I mean by the mathematical limiting case, the moment of emission and the moment of absorption are the same moment. This means, in a very precise and not at all metaphorical sense, that ancient light is not old, it has not aged. It is arriving at your retina from a star that may no longer exist, and from its own geometric point of view, the source, and you are neighbors. The universe that took billions of years to expand between that source and your eye does not appear in the photon's accounting. The photon skips it entirely. Not because photons are fast, because they are null. I want to tell you about a conversation I had in the late 80s with someone I won't name, a very smart physicist, who was deeply uncomfortable with this. He kept insisting that the null interval was a mathematical artifact, that it was a degenerate case, a limiting point of the theory, not something to be taken as physically real. He felt that taking it seriously led to absurdities. If the photon accumulates no proper time, how can we say it travels at all? If the interval is zero, in what sense does anything happen between emission and absorption? And my answer then and my answer now is that discomfort is the physics. The fact that the framework doesn't give you a clean story about the photon's journey is not a problem with the framework. It is the framework telling you something real about what photons are. They are not little particles making little trips through space. They are quantum excitations of the electromagnetic field propagating along null geodesics in a curved space-time, connecting events that are geometrically zero distance apart and the only measure of distance that is physically invariant, calling that travel is a concession to human intuition, not a statement about reality. Let me put it another way. Think about what motion means for a massive particle. A massive particle, moving through space-time, traces a world line, a path through four-dimensional space-time. Along that world line, proper time accumulates. The particle ages. Clocks tick. Atoms oscillate. Processes happen. The length of the world line measured in proper time is the elapsed experience of that particle between two events. That's what travel means for massive things, a non-zero proper time interval separating the start from the end. A photon's world line has zero length in proper time. The start and end are not separated by any of that accumulated interval. The photon does not age. It does not experience duration. The trip from the sun to your eye, 8 minutes in our coordinate time, is zero duration in the only physically invariant sense of duration. So when I say light doesn't travel the way you think, I'm not being rhetorical. I'm saying that the word travel carries implications, duration, distance, in a frame-independent sense, a journey from here to there that do not apply to null paths in Minkowski space-time, where I have to be honest about something that keeps me up at night, and I mean that without any theater. I've been describing this in the language of classical space-time, the smooth, continuous, four-dimensional manifold of general relativity. And in that language, everything I've said is precise and correct. But there's a level underneath that language where things are much less clear. And I think any physicist who claims certainty there is either lying to you or lying to themselves. At very small scales, the Planck scale, roughly 10 to the minus 35 meters, we have strong reasons to believe that space-time itself is not smooth and continuous. Quantum mechanics and general relativity together suggest that at those scales, the geometry of space-time fluctuates, that the classical picture of a smooth manifold breaks down, that space and time as we know them are emergent properties of something deeper. We don't know what that something deeper is. Loop quantum gravity makes one proposal, string theory makes another. Neither of them is experimentally confirmed. Neither of them gives us a fully satisfactory picture of what happens to the concept of a null geodesic at the Planck scale, where the very fabric of space-time is presumably foaming and fluctuating in ways we can barely describe. What this means for the photon, for the question of what it means for light to propagate along a null path, is genuinely open. The answer I've given you is the classical relativistic answer, and it is correct at every scale we can currently probe experimentally. But I suspect, and this is a suspicion I hold not softly, but with some force after 50 years in this business, that the deepest answer is going to require us to understand space-time itself as emergent from something that doesn't look like space-time at all. And in that underlying description, concepts like null interval and proper time may be effective, approximate notions, real and precise at our scales, but dissolving into something stranger at the bottom. I don't know what that something stranger is, neither does anyone else, and that is not a comfortable thing to sit with. I think there's one more thing you need to understand about light and rest frames that I haven't made fully explicit, and it's the thing that ties all of this together. The reason light has no rest frame is not, at bottom, a kinematic fact. It's not that light happens to move at a speed where the Lorentz boost becomes undefined, as if the speed of light was some arbitrary number and things might have been different. The reason light has no rest frame is that photons are massless. Mass zero, exactly, not approximately. And in special relativity, massless particles are required to travel at exactly the speed of light. Not close to it. Not almost, exactly. The relationship between mass and the maximum achievable speed is not incidental. It comes from the structure of the Lorentz group, the mathematical group of symmetries that underlies relativistic spacetime. Massless particles are representations of that group that have no rest frame. That's not a rule imposed from outside. It's what massless means in the relativistic framework. So when you ask why light travels at the speed of light, you're asking the wrong question. Light travels at the speed of light because it is massless. And massless things travel at the speed of light because that is the one speed that looks the same in every inertial frame, the speed that is not relative to anything, the speed that sits at the boundary between the time-like and the space-like, the one velocity that is its own Lorentz invariant. The speed of light is not a speed that light happens to travel at. The speed of light is a structural feature of space-time, and photons are the things that inhabit that structure exactly. Let me give you an analogy that is physically honest, not just pretty. Think about rotations in ordinary two-dimensional space. If you rotate a vector in the xy plane, the x and y components change, but the length of the vector stays the same. The length is invariant under rotations. Now think about Minkowski spacetime. Lorentz boosts changing from one inertial frame to another are like rotations, except they mix the time axis with the space axis. And just as ordinary rotations preserve lengths in Euclidean space, Lorentz boosts preserve the space-time interval. The space-time interval is the invariant quantity, the thing everyone agrees on regardless of their state of motion. And the null interval, the interval along the path of light, is preserved under Lorentz boosts because it's zero, and zero times any Lorentz factor is still zero. The path of light is the unique path for which the invariant interval is zero. That's not a coincidence. That is the structure of relativistic spacetime making itself visible through the behavior of massless particles. This is what Einstein saw in 1905 that no one else quite saw. Not that light was fast, not that the Michelson-Morley result needed to be accommodated, but that the invariance of the speed of light was not a puzzle to be explained away. It was a clue about the deep structure of spacetime itself. He elevated it to a principle. He said, "The speed of light is the same for all inertial observers, and I will build a new mechanics around that principle and see where it leads." And what it led to was the demolition of absolute time, the demolition of absolute simultaneity, the unification of space and time into space-time, the equivalence of mass and energy, and eventually, through the work of the decade that followed the general theory of relativity and the recognition that space-time itself is a dynamic, curved entity that responds to matter and energy, all of that from one stubborn fact about light. That is not a small thing. Now, let me connect this to something even larger, because I think if you walk out of here tonight thinking this was just a story about photons and Lorentz transformations, you missed the most important part. The null interval, the geometric fact that light connects events with zero space-time separation, turns out to be intimately connected to questions about information, causality, and the structure of the observable universe. The light cone, the surface of zero space-time interval emanating from any event, is the boundary of causal influence. Nothing can influence anything outside its light cone, because to do so would require either faster-than-light travel or backward causation, both of which the structure of space-time forbids. The light cone is not just a geometric curiosity, it is the causal skeleton of the universe. Every physical law, every interaction, every piece of information that gets from one place to another has to travel inside or along the light cone. Causality itself is enforced by the fact that light travels along null geodesics. This connects directly to work that I've spent a large part of my career on. When you ask what happens to information that falls into a black hole, the question at the center of my 30-year argument with Stephen Hawking, you are at root asking a question about whether information can travel outside the light cone of the black hole. Hawking's original argument was that it couldn't, that information was genuinely destroyed inside the horizon, that the black hole emitted thermal radiation that carried no information about what had fallen in. I argued, and eventually the community came around to agreeing, that information cannot be destroyed, that it must be encoded in the Hawking radiation, scrambled beyond recognition but physically present. And the argument for that, the reason unitarity must be preserved, connects back to the holographic principle, to the idea that all the information in a volume of space can be encoded on its boundary, which in turn connects to the behavior of light and null surfaces in ways that I could spend another 3 hours on and still not exhaust. The point is, the strange behavior of light, the null interval, the absence of a rest frame, the zero proper time, is not a quirky footnote in the physics of electromagnetism. It is a load-bearing wall in the structure of everything we understand about space-time, causality, information, and the nature of physical reality. When you pull on that thread, you get general relativity, you get black holes, you get the holographic principle, you get questions about whether space-time itself is emergent from something like entanglement. The whole edifice hangs on that one fact. Light has no rest frame. I find genuinely, productively unsettling. Not comfortably unsettling. Not the pleasant shiver of a mystery you expect to be solved soon. Really unsettling. We describe light as propagating through space-time along null geodesics. We describe the photon as a quantum excitation of the electromagnetic field. Both descriptions are correct in their domain. But they are not obviously the same description, and the connection between quantum field theory and the curved space-time of general relativity is one of the deepest unsolved problems in all of physics. When we push that connection to its limits, near the singularities of black holes, at the origin of the universe, at the Planck scale, the mathematics breaks down, the theory stops giving finite answers, The smooth space-time that null geodesics live on starts to dissolve, and what replaces it, we don't know. What this means for the propagation of light, for what it actually means at the deepest level, for a photon to go from here to there is not something any living physicist can answer with confidence. We have the classical picture, which is beautiful and precise. We have the quantum field theory picture, which is beautiful and precise in a different regime. We don't have the unified picture that tells us what is really happening underneath both. And I think the answer, when we find it, is going to make the strangeness of null intervals look like small change. Einstein took the invariance of the speed of light and used it to rewrite space and time. Whatever comes next is going to take something we don't yet know how to even precisely state and use it to rewrite whatever space and time turn out to be made of. I don't know what that is. I've spent 50 years looking at it from different angles. I have some hunches, but the answer isn't in yet. That's the situation. Light has no rest frame. The universe is built around that fact, and the deepest reason why is still, honestly, a question that is open in ways that should make every physicist who thinks otherwise look harder. Don't let anyone tell you this is finished. It isn't. The most important argument is still going on,